Welcome to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 210. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson, recording my fifth consecutive broadcast from the Darwin Botanical Garden, a beautiful, sacred macronematon that I've been very blessed to be able to spend time in for the past few weeks. I've just painted rocks for my two favorite trees here, Grandmother Arboreum Giganteum, who I've learned is a Ficus racemosus, a fig tree whose limb broke the other day, and now it's been repaired, taken care of, and she's not in so much pain. But I've left a painted rock for her and for Grandmother Baobab, my two favorite trees here, as well as for the woman named Sharon, who's the main caretaker of the gardens here. I'd like to thank the people at Eva's Cafe for letting me have my most ultimate art studio outdoors that I've ever had anywhere. It was a very, very productive time, and I just sat there and made the notes for this show. Today is the 4th of August, 2017. This show is called The Atlantean Discontinuity in the Absence of the Sacred and the Healing of Koyaanisqatsi. It's very important to note that in 2 days, it'll be the 6th of August, which is the 72nd anniversary of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima, followed 2 days later on August 8th by the bombing of Nagasaki. These were tests 2 and 3, the first test being July 16th, 1945, the Trinity explosion. This was the dawn of the nuclear age of atomic warfare of the peaceful atom. Very much a turning point, but we've crossed several other thresholds like this in the past few years and decades, which is a little of what I'll talk about on this show. The Atlantean discontinuity is something I've mentioned before. It's kind of a metaphor for what I see looming on the horizon of humanity in the very near future. In the Absence of the Sacred is the first part of the title of a brilliant book by one of my favorite American researchers of the 20th century. His name is Jerry Mander, M-A-N-D-E-R. The full title is In the Absence of the Sacred, The Failure of Technology and the Survival of the Indian Nation. The Healing of Koyaanisqatsi. Koyaanisqatsi I've talked about many, many, many times before. It's a Hopi Indian word that means crazy life or life out of balance. It's a concept they've had in their culture for thousands of years that describes exactly where we are right now, a global civilization running amok off the rail, being a threat to all other life forms. And the Hopis say that this is the fourth world, that this has happened 3 times before, and that the Great Spirit, Wakantanka, and Mother Earth eventually had to take steps to cleanse the earth of all that was out of balance with life in order to preserve the ability of Mother Earth and life itself to continue on. So I don't know about the first 3 worlds, but the implication from the Hopis is that it was indeed us, Homo sapiens, man the wise. I'm not sure what we called ourselves in these earlier worlds, but maybe we have our sense of Orwellian humor has grown. At least in this world, we are the only major threat to life on this planet. This show is going to be kind of a rehash of a lot of topics I've talked about before, but I'm trying to bring it all together because it's, to me, this is the most important stuff that we can walk around thinking about now. Yet who wants to? Who wants to think about the impending demise of our planetary civilization? But yet we're each a part. We're each a soldier in World War III, whether we like it or not, just by virtue of the fact that we're alive now. The biggest difference I see between people in the world today is not what the color of their skin is, not their religion, not what language they speak, not what they do for a living, not even which way they think is up or down. But it's the difference between being civilized and being indigenous. Now, both of these are words, and they're sort of generalized abstractions or concepts that's much more, they're both abstractions or concepts that are simplified versions of a much more complex reality. civilize comes from the Latin word civitas that means living in cities and all that implies. And indigenous basically means that the people are living on the true path of the Great Spirit close to the earth, that their mental operating environment is very coherent and resonant with the world of nature and not consisting of artifacts manufactured by other people, whether they're material or cognitive or psychic artifacts in our own minds. I think that civilization is rooted or founded on war on Mother Earth by the virtue of the fact that we have to engage in one of the most primary violations of the Hopi law. If we dig precious things from the land, we will invite disaster. So mining has been a prerequisite for all civilizations from day one. We've just sort of taken it to the next level over and over again. I could do a whole show just about the mining industry, but it's just one example of some of our most flagrant violations and the aspects of the war that we're conducting on Mother Earth right now. I think that in the world of today, that really, there's almost no truly indigenous people left. There's people that want to call themselves indigenous, and they may be a little closer to being indigenous than a lot of quote-unquote civilized white people that live in cities. But, you know, even the indigenous people of Australia here aren't indigenous nearly in the true sense that they once were. And this is not a value judgment by any means, it's just an observation. But even the people that are supposedly still indigenous people on any continent, if they've got electricity, if they've got mobile phones, if they've got vehicles, if they've got television, if they're eating food that they didn't grow, if they're in touch with the outside world of civilization, they are not indigenous people anymore. They can be. So I really don't think the only truly indigenous people left in the world would be those that have not yet even had any contact with the outside world of civilization. And I don't know, I mean, we'd have no way of knowing, because if we knew that any of them existed, then they would have had contact, at least psychically. I mean, and I seriously doubt that David Attenborough or anybody like that's going to find some tribe living up in the Amazon that they're being seen by the white man, but they don't know that they're being seen. So I doubt that that's the case. So it could be that there's no human beings left on the planet that are actually truly indigenous, which is actually quite scary, because a lot of people think they are, but they aren't. And this is part of the paradox of being here now. I think that the only truly indigenous people left on this planet are the whales and dolphins. And I've talked about them as people many, many times before. You don't have to be a human being to be a person. In the ancient tradition of some of the East Coast Aboriginal tribes here in Australia, the whales and dolphins long, long, long ago taught ancestors of the humans how to become people, which I think this is really true. They've been around here so much longer than we have, with all the neurophysiological and cognitive necessities for personhood. But they don't have hands. They live in the ocean. They're a totally spiritual but non-material culture. Anyway, but that's not the topic of this show. I think that they have managed to resist being contacted or communicated with, despite the best efforts on the part of humanity to try to. Now, I'm just going to use some of the phrases that the nonprofit organizations like to use. They're going to crack the code, the dolphin language. And that's all bullshit, because there's no code to crack and it's not a language. They communicate very sophisticatedly in many ways, most of which we don't really understand, but they don't use language. They use very complex systems of communication, but if they did use a language, it wouldn't be a symbolic language like we use, where we use words that stand for something. A harmonic language, closer to singing, may be a closer approximation of their communication, but I still don't think it's right to call it language, because they don't use their tongues for making sound or communicating, which is the root word of the word language. So communication, we talk about communicable diseases. There's a country called Bhutan, B-H-U-T-A-N, that about a decade ago television came in there for the very first time, and within 6 months, they had a wave of just unprecedented crime, rape, theft, murder, all different kind of stuff that had never existed there before. And it was all brought in by television, like a cognitive viral infection came in on the airwaves. So I think that through whatever means it's happening, probably by the guidance of the Great Spirit and deliberate resistance on the part of the whales and dolphins themselves, they love us, but they've got a sort of a psychic or psychological membrane around their whole reality matrix that's preventing them from being contaminated by our mentality. Now, this could be the topic for a whole show. But anyway, I think because they're safe from communicating with us, they aren't able to be infected by all the bullshit of our demented, distributed mental operating environment. Two big differences I see, or a big difference seen two different ways. The indigenous minds, the people that are still, you know, connected with nature and that love Mother Earth and are trying to live on the true path of the Great Spirit, or to walk as simply and as lightly as possible on Mother Earth, yet still being here now in this world. One of the main aspects of their whole mentality is that they perceive a very dangerous situation that we're in. They've been giving us profound warnings for many, many, many years and decades. Elders of all the Native American tribes, from all the different indigenous peoples of all the different continents. For example, the Kogi people of Colombia came out 30 years ago with their message that, you know, we need to really look at what's happening on Mother Earth right now. The Hopi Native Americans, about whom I've talked many times. I got to meet Hopi Elder Thomas Banyaka in Flagstaff, Arizona in 1986, where I learned about the Hopi prophecy. And while we were up there, the Chernobyl meltdown happened in the Ukraine. While we were learning about the Hopi prophecy of, if we dig precious things, we will invite disaster. Because that area is where some of the uranium for the first atomic bombs was mined out. I've received direct transmissions, warnings from the dolphins themselves twice on the same beach on Great Barrier Island, New Zealand. And I've talked about these before. Very, very, very profound warnings that something, a planetary catastrophe of some unknown dimension or origin, is going to happen soon. And another really interesting one that I've mentioned is that when I was on the Big Island of Hawaii a few years ago, I met a really interesting woman named Shelley. And she's an ancestor of the original Polynesian migrants who came there. She believes from the continent that sank, that was called Lemuria. They're called the Ha'i, H-A-apostrophe-I, Ha'i. And Ha is the Polynesian and Maori name for the sperm whale, because it's like Ha. That's the sound they make when they exhale, when they come up. But her story was similar, that the sea god took on the form of a whale crossed with a dolphin and came and warned the ancestors on Lemuria that they needed to leave the island because of a coming cataclysm. And they did, and they were guided to their new destination, which is the island of Hawaii now. But they were warned by the sea gods of impending catastrophe. So this is common themes that I've been noticing and experiencing in my own life, and I really think that we need to have our eyes to the heavens and be watching what's going on and sensing deep within ourselves. Because I do think that we're on the brink of some major changes in what we call business as usual. Yes, the more or less indigenous mentality is greatly disturbed by what's happening and feels a profound sense of urgency and warning about the immediate future and the prognosis for life on Earth. But the civilized mentality in general thinks everything is all right, because this mentality is essentially the engineered product of the most powerful hallucination engine technology ever created. The powers of mass communication, psychological warfare, what the Nazis called the Weltanschauungskrieg, worldview warfare, the engineering of consent, the advertising and marketing industries, the modern contemporary mindset in general is littered with the memes du jour of the psychic orchestrators. We've seen two parallel processes in recent decades and years, an increasing divergence of reality within the distributed mental operating environment, further and further away from any kind of true understanding of what's going on in the world, and not so much with respect to the strictly human reality, which is what most people only pay attention to, and even then only a small subset of that which is delivered by mass media, but the real reality, the larger context of the human relationship and effect on all the other non-living beings of Mother Earth and Mother Earth herself. To me, this is the real reality, the context within which everything we do must be looked at, because within our own frame of reference, anything can just be whatever we want. But a big part of my work is trying to map out and understand the ways in which Mother Earth and other life forms see, experience, and feel us and our presence and impact here. Because we aren't the only species of life. We aren't the only ones who matter. We aren't the only sentient and intelligent beings here, but we think we are. So, in other words, most of civilization is walking around in a kind of la-la land mentality. People think, oh yeah, we've got some problems, but we're making progress towards sustainable development and, you know, all this stuff. And it's just, it's a complete crock of politicians. Parallel with this divergence from reality, we've seen an unparalleled and exponential growth in the whole military-industrial technogenous complex all over the whole planet in many, many, many different ways. I've talked about and mapped this out on probably the majority of my shows, but the word juggernaut is not an exaggeration to describe this planetary entity. A big, big, big part of my work is in doing what I call the quantification of Koyaanisqatsi, trying to map out with some numbers and hardcore data the actual damage that we're doing to Mother Earth. And I consider almost all of this damage to be completely asymmetric warfare, in the sense that it's totally non-reversible. None of it can be undone. None of it can actually be remedied. We can't begin to do anything about the global nuclear scenario. We can't do anything about all the mines that we've dug, all the hydrocarbons that we've drained out, all the toxins that we're distributing into the environment. We're absolutely powerless to do anything about this except talk about it. Even if we wanted to, there's no way we can correct what we've done. Hence the necessity of the day of purification. But I think that we've crossed several thresholds, or trigger points, if you want to call it that, that are bringing the day of purification ever more close as part of a heliocosmic and beyond intelligent and living system that watches out for the health of life everywhere, not only on just on Mother Earth. We aren't separate from all the other planets and the stars. And some people believe, as did Dr. John Lilly, that water-based life exists on other planets, and that the whales and dolphins here are in touch with that life more strongly than any other beings, that they're actually repeater stations for the signals from water-based life on other planets and other star systems. And I think that could really be true. But I'll just sort of talk about a few of the most dangerous things I see happening right now, each of which can be considered a sort of a very dangerous threshold that we've crossed that is bringing us ever closer to the Atlantean discontinuity. One of them is what we call geoengineering, which can mean a lot of different things, but the main thing in common with all geoengineering is the scale on which it happens. It's big. Geo, meaning the earth, engineering the earth. One of the main uses of this term now has to do with atmospheric modification operations from the spraying of aerosols, or what we call chemtrails, that have a variety of different functions. One of the main ones is to alter the electrical conductivity of the stratosphere to make the atmosphere more conductive for electromagnetic and microwave energies, which are involved with the technotronic or geophysical era weapon systems, for example, HAARP and other microwave technologies that are involved in weather modification, generating artificial earthquakes, missile, quote-unquote, defense, and ultimately sort of hemispheric or planetary psychological mind control operations. This is all talked about by Zbigniew Brzezinski in his book, Between Two Ages, from 1992. Another major threshold is the mining industry that's just running out of control. Like, if you look just here in Australia, for example, you've got totally robotic mines in Western Australia, run by Rio Tinto and with Komatsu technology. We've got the debacle of deep seabed mining preparing to rear its head in Papua New Guinea. Next year, a company called Nautilus, a renegade Canadian company, getting ready to use all these technologies patented by Lockheed in the 1970s. Deep sea robotic mining, the unveiling of the mining of the Galilee Basin for coal in Queensland, the Adani coal mine, which would be the largest ore loading facility on the planet. Australia already has the largest gas complex on the planet on a Barrow Island in Western Australia. It's the Chevron Gorgon project. But the scale of some of these things, when you see pictures of them from the air, you just can't believe that an industrial facility could be this big. But there's many of them. I mean, like I said, all this stuff is basically invisible to the public mind, who's more concerned with their cooking shows on television. You've got another threshold is the whole electromagnetic and microwave scenario as mapped out by my wonderful researcher friends, Dr. Terry, Mr. Limpet Lilly, and Stuart the Effect Simonson, who I've interviewed numerous times on my show in the past year. These have to do with the electrification of the marine environment. But the microwave scenario extends to everyone on the land. It's something that we're greatly affected by. The global nuclear scenario, continuing to this day greater than ever, but how many people ever think about it? You're probably not going to see anything in the news about the 72nd anniversary of Hiroshima or Nagasaki in a couple of days. But these synthetic radionuclides are out there more powerfully than ever, radiating all their alpha, beta, and gamma rays and creating cancer and all kinds of diseases in all forms of life. We are the experiment. We're only the third generation to exist since all this stuff came into being. So we have no idea what the real long-term effects are for life, for all these different technologies and substances. A very disturbing thing. We already know that Fukushima has been just releasing massive amounts of radionuclides into the ocean ever since it happened in March of 2011. But now, the Japanese government's getting ready to dump hundreds of thousands of tons of radioactive seawater that they've been storing there. They're going to just dump that into the ocean. This might have already happened, but this is just adding another nail in the coffin of humanity. But all, like, each of these things I'm talking about is a planetary catastrophe in its own right. But we're talking multiple planetary catastrophes now happening as routine business as usual day by day. The global toxicity scenario, just if you look at the amount of hydrocarbons that are being drained out of Mother Earth and their toxicity to biological life, and the amount of plastic pollution made from hydrocarbons, and also the scenario with glyphosate or Roundup, the Monsanto chemical that's showing up in everybody's body everywhere. Monsanto is a war company. Everything they make is a weapon. Deforestation. Australia, Eastern Australia, is like one of the top 10 places in the world for deforestation right now. It's just destroying the habitat of all kinds of endangered birds and little animals like the koalas. And it's just the ecological devastation in Australia and starting up in New Zealand in the past few years, it's happening faster than just about anywhere in the world. And it's a very fragile, defenseless ecosystems that are just under attack. And it's so big that a lot of people, you know, you just don't see it. But I notice as I travel around, and I go to great ends to try to get all this on my radar to share it with the few people who might actually care. Trees create a large amount of oxygen for us to breathe, and they breathe in carbon dioxide. Probably the greatest threshold that we continue across is global militarization, the whole building and deployment of weapons systems and military bases and technologies all around the world, not only by the U.S. The U.S. is the main hegemonist in the world today, but Russia, China, all the other nations too, everybody's playing part. They're really all on the same team. It's their technologies against Mother Earth. When you look at corporations like Raytheon, for example, who was just gifted an area the size of Texas called Woomera in South Australia to create the world's largest missile and weapons testing facility. Lockheed, that manufactures missiles that are going to be installed in South Korea and Hawaii now to battle the supposed North Korean threat, which is another crock of politicians. Monsanto, our favorite company that makes Agent Orange, genetically modified organisms, glyphosate. We've got the weaponization of space, the weaponization of the deep sea, undersea warfare with submarines and all kinds of electronic technologies is just exploding all around the world. But again, this is invisible to the majority of people. Parallel with the militarization is the militarization of the mind, what I call the infotoxin hypothesis, or information toxicology, the study of the poisoning of the mental environment and the engineering of our mentality. But the whole climate change thing is really the greatest psychological warfare project ever undertaken. I'm calling it the Manhattan Project of PR, public relations. And it's becoming clear that climate change, as talked about in mass media over the past decade or two, it's being marketed like a psychological warfare meme. And it has a lot to do with fake science, people that are on the payroll of different organizations who know that they're not telling the truth. And this is not the topic of this show. But they've succeeded beyond their wildest dreams at convincing the average person that carbon dioxide is a poison and that carbon is evil and that we must get rid of it from the atmosphere. But I'd really like to thank Mike Adams, the health ranger of Natural News, who's really been paralleling my own thought in the recent weeks, talking about the war on carbon is really a war on life, and the war on climate change is really just a smokescreen for geophysical warfare. Because all the extreme weather events, sure, Mother Nature can do whatever she wants, but a lot of the extreme weather in recent decades and years is clearly the result of geophysical warfare. All of this is aimed at the ultimate agenda of depopulation, which has been on the top of the list of the goals of the people who think that they are the overlords of this planet. You can call them the international banking cartel, the top ruling elite families, the New World Order, which is like the CEOs of all the top corporations and banking institutions and academic institutions and think tanks and stuff like that. This is a real coalition of people, and they do wield a lot of power. But for a long time, the powers that be, including an organization called the Club of Rome, who was instrumental in launching the whole global warming climate change scenario. They said in their own book called The First Global Revolution, published in 1990, that they were going to foist fake social and environmental crises on humanity in order to manipulate people into accepting a one-world government. And one of the crises they were going to foist was, they called it global warming. So this is all too true. This is exactly what they've been doing. But the emphasis is that they were trying to create the impression of an enemy that all of humanity could be afraid of, and humanity could unite to fight this one global enemy, and then the New World Order would be the people that would manage this fight. For a long time, they were talking about what this would do. It would take the form of creating the impression of a fake, of an alien invasion, beings from space attacking. And this has been given a lot of serious consideration by the intelligence community. And it could still be in the works, because the technology exists now to create a sort of spectacle in the sky that would fool a lot of people into thinking we were being invaded by aliens. And then we would need the New World Order global police state to come out and take control. But now I think that they've adopted the climate change bogey to be the common enemy that'll unite us, because it seems to be working quite well. It'll be interesting to see what people will be convinced to do to battle the evil demons of carbon dioxide and carbon, because breathing creates carbon dioxide. Anyway, as I've said before, we all are the soldiers in World War III, and we're all contributing to the existence of what I call the Homo sapien macrovirus. Some of my favorite writers, like Joseph Crutch, Lauren Isley, have talked about the danger of what humanity has become. Jonas Salk, the scientist who invented the polio vaccine, talked about what he called internally arising metasociobiological pathogenic influences that would spontaneously arise within us as our threat to the planetary environment increased. These, something that would begin to take us out, would arise from within ourselves. So that's a very, very, very interesting hypothesis that haven't talked about on the show before, but I'd like to explore it more. But it's sort of like we've developed a species autoimmune disorder. I say that Mother Earth has been allowing us to wage war on ourselves, to take ourselves out up to a certain point. But I think we've crossed all these thresholds, and we're crossing more and more all the time. And the summation of all these different events and processes is adding up to the necessity of the day of purification coming quite soon. And I don't claim to be an expert on this. I don't have any way of really knowing, except for my own inner feelings, that the more I learn about what we are doing and trying to create summation operators across the whole global scenarios in all these different areas, it looks like that Mother Earth really needs to get rid of us, because we aren't showing any interest in even slowing down. And like I said before, there's no way we can correct all this stuff. All we're doing is convincing ourselves with our global communication apparatus that everything's okay, this is all just progress. We need to strive for sustainable development. I mean, that's a huge oxymoron, sustainable development. There's no such thing. I really feel like we're on the verge of the Atlantean discontinuity. You might also call it the Lemurian discontinuity, but the name is not important. The implication is that a lot of people believe, that there have been large-scale civilizations who were destroyed in the past few thousand years. And you could think of it that it happened randomly. You know, like we think that the asteroid collision that took out the dinosaurs, it was just a random event, right? Well, but if the universe is truly conscious and sentient, and if it's a teleological universe, as I suspect it might be, things like this aren't just random. They happen with synchronistic coherence. So in order to preserve what's left of the health of life on Mother Earth, Akintanka is going to have to go to some pretty serious lengths to cleanse Mother Earth, because Homo sapiens is deeply embedded in every nook and cranny. And so that's why Thomas Banyakya, his words have haunted me when he said that we're not going to avert or preclude the day of purification, but we can hope to lessen its severity if enough good people change how they live and really get on the true path of the Great Spirit. We might lessen its severity, which means that a lot of the lives of the innocent life forms who are already being victimized by our species would be spared from whatever Mother Earth and the Great Spirit has to do to cleanse the Earth of us. But this is very, very, very heavy stuff. It's impossible to really know what's going to happen, but I think that it's part of my duty as someone who's been gifted a lot of beautiful talents and abilities and opportunities in this life. It's my mission as a Kaitiaki of life, of Mitakaya Yasin and Mother Ocean and Mother Earth and all my fellow beings. It's been my honor and my duty to try to share with you the vision that I have been experiencing. And everybody has to decide for themselves how they want to live and what they want to do. But I really think it's important to not walk around in la-la land. It's important to own the responsibility for what our species is doing and to seriously consider what I'm saying. Because when I talk about a lot of this stuff, some people just shut right off. But don't do it. Listen to what I'm saying and see, evaluate if you're on your absolute highest path. Because how many people do you know that get up every day and go like, well, I wonder what I can do on behalf of life on Earth today and to help Mother Earth and my fellow beings? How many people say that? I doubt very few people would come across like that. Although I do. Most people are like, they don't even think. It's just like they have the Lofono syndrome. Look out for number one. Everything is like their own small little worldview. Their little small reality about their family and what they want to do and making themselves comfortable. And I just really think if we could expand our horizon of identity and ask more of ourselves, we would be going a long way towards creating the possibility that there might be a seventh generation of humanity. But right now, I'd say that there's a very good chance that there's not going to be. Live simply so that others may simply live. Ask more of yourself. Constantly try to reprogram and renavigate your life to your higher and higher, highest path. Be with nature and consciously send love to all our fellow beings, especially the non-human life. We're not talking about worshiping. We're talking about honoring the sacred life of fellow beings. This is Jeff Wefferson signing off from the Darwin Botanical Garden. My next show will be recorded at Uluru, one of the main chakras in the body of the rainbow serpent down in the central desert. We're leaving tomorrow to drive down there, me and my friend Gaetan from France. And I'll be recording broadcast number 211 from probably the base of the rock. This is Jeff Weverson signing off from beneath Grandmother Ficus Rasamosas. And Teddy, Wally, Ruby Ann, Big Teddy, Heidi, and Phil. Oh, Wavy Up Sweet wants to thank you for having us here. Love you guys, and everybody take care. Thanks to Jules Stanley, UCY-TV, Mitakaya Yasin.
Good day. Thank you. Thank you. Fuck. Fuck. Fuck.